Come hang with us, Magic Johnson.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dimebag Podcast. I am Tyler Wilkinson. We have our skeleton crew today, but you know, we're fierce, even if we're low in numbers. We have Megan Bard.
Hello.
And Kevin Meacham.
This is my fight song.
Nice. I don't know if we can do that. Do we have to pay for the copyright?
I think I only sang one bar, so I think it should be fine.
Okay, cool. We should do one uncopyrighted bar of most pop songs from here on out. I guess the big story is we're recording this on Friday night, which is just great media savvy to record and then release a podcast on Friday night of Labor Day weekend when everyone wants to listen. This is just brilliant. But what that does mean is we're about 24 hours removed from the first UConn football game of the season. Meet, you wrote a nice recap today. Why don't you sort of give us your high-level takeaways from last night?
Yeah, I think it was really upsetting for most of that game. Every year, like they, you know, there's something to sell us on. Like last year, we were coming off the bowl year and bringing everybody back. This year, you know, we were hashtag restored. Yeah, it's pretty clear we're still not very good at football. Holy Cross is probably not going to finish above 500 in their league. Maybe that quarterback will be really good. I don't know, but to struggle and to be down two touchdowns to Holy Cross is very, very frightening.
Oh, that's bad? That's a bad thing?
That is a bad thing. Because, like, Quentin Flowers is probably, like, I want infinity touchdowns. Like, that's the over-under.
It's funny, though. So, like,
yeah, wasn't, like, UConn was favored by, like, 23 or something?
Yeah, they oh, God.
Overselling expectations on that one.
I don't know why anyone, like, we haven't beaten an FCS team by more than 7 points since Pasqualoni's first game. And we are, like, I think we're still negative based on the Towson game in, like, point differential against FCS teams since that game. I said in the preview, I think, that, like, if you had any hope of a turnaround, you'd see it in game one, and we didn't see it. The offensive line was as bad as we thought. The secondary was as bad as I feared. You know, Pindell, you know, he looked okay at times, but he definitely looked like it was his first collegiate start.
You know, you ran through all of these big problem areas and somehow, like, we were just still carrying optimism into the game. And then all of those problem areas manifested themselves immediately and overwhelmingly and obviously. And then in hindsight, it's like, why were we excited?
Like, the team is what it is. It's a bunch of seniors, and then, like, the two classes after that are pretty bare. And then, you know, Edsel's recruits are going to start flowing into the program, and, you know, within 2-3 years, you hope, you know, you'll have things up. And but, yeah, I mean, the cupboard is very much bare. I think that's very clear. And we're just going to kind of have to live with the growing pains for the first few weeks of the season.
The problems were very, very clear. Like, from immediate. And, of course, it didn't help that Foley got the game of first defensive possession. Like, that wasn't ideal. And then, of course, we don't know what the hell happened to Junior's shoulder. That was at the end of the game. But I think it was really hilarious that we all talked about how important Foley was when we did the round table. And then Foley got knocked out. And it was like, oh, no, the defense is really bad without him.
The drop-off from Fatakaz, and no disrespect to Kevin Murphy, who, you know, made a couple nice plays, but he got pushed around for the most part. He's just not as big. You can't expect a 275, 80-pound guy to be as forceful at the nose tackle position as a 300-pound guy who's a senior.
So, obviously, we saw almost every unit of UConn's team get outplayed from, you know, the lines on both offense and defense, the secondary, the linebacker, special teams. You know, there was problems all over the place. So I guess my question is, how much of that do you attribute to sort of growing pains, the first game out, you know, still, you know, the first time they run at full speed versus the true talent level on the field?
I would say defensively, I'm more optimistic. I think they can improve a lot more just because it's a new scheme that, you know, there's enough athletic talent to make it workable.
Like, we're starting the season down. with like on the offensive line. It's like that was always going to be a problem, but especially missing who we're missing to begin the season, it's like it's real thin up on the O-line right now.
It looked like both guards got beaten pretty good. And there wasn't much adjustment in the play calling, which I thought was a little weird. There was none of those, you know, Holy Cross did a pretty good job of, you know, calling short passes and timing routes and, you know, trying to get things open. And we didn't really seem to do that, at least not until Sheriffs came in.
Yeah, I was going to say, the silver lining here is that when Sheriffs came in, they managed to rattle off 3 touchdowns in 17 minutes, which I don't know if y'all remember, but it's been a minute since you've seen that kind of productivity from our offense. Like, that was the thing that struck me the most, because I feel like the last 3 years, our offense has been like defensive turnovers, stupid trick plays, and field goals. Like, that's been 90% of our offense. And it was nice to see actual offensive touchdowns from long drives that, like, you know, caught the kick return to return to punt or return to kickoff, and then ran an offensive drive that ended in the end zone. Like, I don't want to oversell, but like, that's nice. That's a nice thing. We haven't seen that in a minute. And it was nice to see when Sheriffs finally got in. Like, they do need to make some adjustments. You talked about this in your piece, Mitch, about how having more throws to our tight ends, especially because the new kid, what's his name?
Hopkins.
Thank you. Does look like he's got something going on there. That was nice to see. And Hergie Miala looked really good. There were some bright spots. There were definitely some bright spots, but when Sheriffs came in, it was actually fun to watch them play football, which was a new experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because, like, Pindell didn't do that badly. You know, they only scored 7 points, but they had, you know, one drive end inside the 10-yard line and a couple other drives that moved the ball well. So yeah, the offense did pretty much what I thought it would do. I didn't think they were going to break off a bunch of 60-yard touchdowns. But they moved the ball. They got 440 yards, I think, which is not something that UConn football typically does. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with them running 15 to 20 more plays than they ran under Diaco. But it looked organized. They looked, you know, I don't have too many qualms with the offense other than, you know, the line is terrifying. the fact that they couldn't push Holy Cross around and they couldn't run for short yardage against Holy Cross is really, really, really worrisome if you have any hope of this being a good team. That being said, I mean, we went to a bowl game with a bad line 2 years ago, so it's not impossible to overcome, but yeah.
Hey, at least we have 2 playable quarterbacks, because one of them is going to miss games, if not both.
I'd be interested to see, like, because it's still not clear to me how much of last season Sheriff spent hurt. Like, we found out after the fact that his, like, ribs were broken, I guess.
I think it was the Virginia game that he got hurt,
and
so he played 5 more games after that,
which is crazy in and of itself. But he launched one pass, like, he overthrew the receiver, but it was the first time in a while I was like, oh no, he actually can, like, really huck it. And I can't imagine it's really easy to throw a ball when you have in your chest. So it's hard to say with Sheriffs, like, the things that were problematic last year in particular, a lot of that could be chalked up to playing with broken ribs.
And we saw Sheriffs become sort of more, you know, he would run off the line almost immediately. He trusted his line so little that whenever a play would break down last year, even if it was just the flicker of a play about to break down, he was taking off, throwing the ball away, doing everything to try to essentially save his own life, which also makes a lot more sense if you're playing with mashed potato ribs.
I will say the pass blocking was not the worst. No sacks last night. You know, Pindell got hit a few times and Sheriffs did too, but, you know, better.
The shotgun offense is really a much better choice for everybody involved.
Yeah. And the tempo, it worked out, I think.
I like seeing him in the no huddle. The no huddle was nice. And I think, especially given that Sheriffs does have a tendency to telegraph, the less time we spend with him doing that is probably better.
No, I mean, Sheriffs had poise. He had confidence. You know, he looked, had the full control of the situation. He got some good runs.
Can we chat for a moment about how the internet is making fun of him and us basically for doing snaps under center, like practicing it because they were going to have to do a couple of kneel downs. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a salty fan, but to me, it's like, why wouldn't you take a couple of snaps under center? You're doing it under pressure. This guy's not your starting quarterback. They had to practice it. And with Holy Cross knocked him on his ass once. Like, what if he'd fumbled and Holy Cross recovers and scores a touchdown and we lose because they didn't, like, just run it a couple of times to make sure they had it down? Like, just seems like a stupid thing to make fun of, but I might just be a little salty about it. I don't know.
We're also coming off a coaching administration that, as far as we can tell, did not practice anything. So, I mean, if we need to practice the absolute basics, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, and basically, how much has Benedict been saying last week that basically Diaco did absolutely jack shit with the offense? Like, he didn't really even have an offensive coordinator. Like, it's not clear to me that anyone on our offense has gotten coached at all in several years. So, like, just relax, kids. Like, we just gotta make sure. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Did I hallucinate the thing that was like he spent 95% of his time with the linebackers? Because that is the funniest epilogue on the Diaco era I could possibly imagine.
It was wild watching or reading the piece. I think it was a Mike Anthony piece, probably, because Mike Anthony's been killing it for the current. But AD David Benedict was really openly and by name just bashing Diaco. It was like total dirt on the grave.
Well, he's like, okay, so he brings Jerry Kill to campus. Like, okay, you're Benedict. You bring Jerry Kill to campus and are like, here, look, I have brought to you an experienced, incredibly qualified offensive coordinator, as opposed to like that dude you found sitting on the side of the road. How about he works for you? And Diaco's like, nah, I'm all set. Like, what? What kind of like batshit crazy lunatic does that?
Someone who knows he's not qualified to be a head coach and wants to keep any possible replacements far, far away from the program. So before we leave this topic, so who should start a quarterback on Saturday?
I mean, next week you kind of have to go with Sheriffs just because, like, you have to. Like, coming off that game and going to play USF, which is an actual real team, like, you gotta dance with the one that brung you, I feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Pindell's got to be the guy if, you know, UConn's going to be any kind of good this year. But for this week, I think you got to say Sheriffs and, you know, Pindell, get ready. Be ready at all times. Have a short leash. And if USF scores 50 points by halftime, which I think they might, you know, you turn it over and let the kid get some reps.
That's kind of where I'm at. But now that we have established that Fully does not have to sit out the first half, I know that he got checked in the first quarter. He would only have had to sit out the first half if he got checked in the second half or overtime. But he sat out the whole game, so there's no more sitting out involved. He's playing the whole game. Maybe it'll only be like 40 points, Meech. Maybe it won't be 80 points.
So Megan, you were actually the only one of us who was there in person. What was the crowd like, especially at the beginning, and how did it sort of, what did it feel like at the end?
So I will say the beginning was really not bad. The student section in particular was pretty full at the start of the game. It was pretty full. So props to the students for coming out. Per usual, the rest of the stadium took their sweet ass time getting in, which is annoying, though I have to confess I did get waylaid. There's a lot of stuff there now. They moved FanFest back over to the side where most of the people are parking. So there was like stuff to see and live music and a lot more happening outside. So I think that also contributed to people maybe not getting there. That, and it was a 7 night. But once the stadium got full, it wasn't bad. I think they said it was 24,500-ish people. But by, I would say most people stuck around to see the start of the second half, and it was also like garbage. And then it was like a steady stream until they started scoring touchdowns. But by then it was like, I don't know, maybe 10,000 people, if that, still in the stadium.
I don't blame them.
No, and honestly, like, it was getting late. The game ended pretty – it felt like it ended late. It was, like, 11 o'clock by the time we were walking out of there. So I understand. Like, a lot of people are like, I got to go to work tomorrow. I got to go to bed. And the game is trash. I did end up sticking around because once the football started happening – and I was glad I did. I was glad I stayed because they did come back and score touchdowns, and I got to see them score touchdowns. So,
and you got to give my out stickers. Worth.
I did. I gave a few stickers out, not as many as I would have liked, but I was also busy drinking alcohol, so there was that too.
It's priorities.
I did see Meacham's anonymous other half, who was enjoying himself quite a lot that evening.
Sure seems like it.
Yeah. He lives an uppercase life, that one. So what's give me your predictions for next Saturday, the first USF.
Oh God. USF's gonna score a lot of points. 52-20, that's my prediction. I'll go with that.
How about you, Megan?
I was thinking like 40 something. I was in the 40 something to like, I'm hoping for 28. I said I'd be happy with 4 touchdowns a game, so that's what I want.
Is it just me? Because I feel like this happened even last year where, what was the first game? Maine? Was that the one they struggled and barely won?
Yep. Yeah.
And then they went to Navy or whatever soon after and like played really high up to the competition to the point where they should have won the game if Bob Diaco knew how time worked. But is it just me? I feel like this happens a lot. Like even was it the year they lost to Towson that they played Michigan tight?
They almost beat Michigan.
So I feel
they
like this is Michigan. Like a pretty thematic occurrence where they end up barely beating or losing to like a minor league team and then surprisingly playing decent the next week.
It's certainly possible. I mean,
stranger things have happened.
I mean, it's hard to watch the game yesterday and see them winning almost any other game left on the schedule. So I don't think they'll win, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's close at halftime. I mean, I have a feeling USF's going to put them away pretty good in the second half, but I don't know. I'm kind of expecting them to hang in there a little bit.
I mean, all right. Like, I'd be down with it. I'd be really happy if that happened.
And I'm the most pessimistic one left on the staff, and I'm the one saying they'll hang with them for a half.
R.I.P. Russ.
Oh, poor Russ.
Russ is working the graveyard shift at one of his other 40,000 blogging jobs tonight.
Actually, locked to the bathroom at Van Diemen's.
He's deep in the blog mines.
All right, well, let's take a quick break and hear from the famous spokesman for J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut, proud sponsor of Dimeback. The famous, the renowned, the actually being cited by name on Twitter now, which is kind of odd, David Benedict Cumberpatch. David, hello, sir.
You're far too kind. I'm quite honestly stupefied by the kind words of all of my lovely fans on Twitter.
You're approaching Russ level celebrity.
It's quite shocking because in Cambridgeshire, I'm another face in the crowd, and it's so wonderful to be known across the pond, as I call it.
That's an original term you've invented.
Yes, I'm a trendsetter. I've always been a trendsetter, right. And so I'd like to thank UConn Nation for hospitality, and I would love to tell you about some of the fantastic desserts over at J. Timothy's Tavern, if you'll indulge me.
Of course, we've run through several apps and main courses, so this is just really, really a treat, figuratively and literally.
Very clever, very clever.
Thank you.
I'd like to start with a house favorite of mine. My mom, you know, she made this bread pudding all the time, and over at J. Timothy's, you can get it. It's a house favorite. It changes daily. I went there today, and I asked, and the flavor was bread. And it was delicious.
Bread on bread on bread.
just wonderful, just like Mom used to make. Just wonderful.
The best way to flavor bread is with more bread, I find.
For those of you of the more continental taste, there's a vanilla creme brulee. Of course, France, lovely country, south of England, of course. as a channel, I don't know. Infused custard with a crispy sugar topping for only $6. That's £7, £42. Not bad. Also, there's a brownie sundae, the classic, with whipped cream, walnuts, cherry, chocolate, caramel sauce, brownie, of course. You know, cannot have a brownie sundae without a brownie. That would be... that would be like having a cricket league without Sussex.
I wonder what happens if you try to do substitutions, but instead of a brownie, you just get bread. It's a bread sundae. Just a pumpernickel. You laugh, but you would eat it. Thank you, David, for indulging us in the fine cuisine at J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainville, Connecticut. You can go there, find them at jtimothys.com or linked on all of our amazing bi-monthly content on adimeback.com. David, thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Buy football tickets.
Cheerio.
Cheerio.
So anyway, so big news that happened this afternoon that I'm a little salty about, because our inside sources reached out on like Wednesday night to say like Sid Wilson's going to UConn. And we're like, all right, buddy, let us know when it's locked down. And then we read it on Twitter this afternoon. So I want to like retcon in that we broke the story 2 days early. Can we just tell everyone that happened? Maybe yes. It'll become fact.
Yep.
But exciting.
Just like we told you all 2 days ago.
Right. So Sidney Wilson, who's a wing who committed to St. John's really unexpectedly, basically, a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago, basically went to a few summer classes at St. John's, realized it's an awful, awful place, and is now reneging on that agreement to come to UConn, which is good news for UConn.
So I think it was like pretty clear all along that like, he wanted to go to UConn, and I know Peter's sources were hearing like right up until the last minute that he was coming to UConn. Then all of a sudden it was like, St. John's, and he's from New York, and like, I don't know. All of a sudden it was like, actually, I never really wanted to go here.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to read too far into it to know that there is some extracurricular decision making happening, at least in the circle, in the decision making circle.
Yeah. And I mean, he only committed in like May, wasn't it? Or April or May? It was this spring. So it didn't take that long before he was like, actually, I don't want to be here.
So this will be really interesting, though, because, you know, theoretically, because he's enrolled at St. John's, he should have to sit out a year. But
which is stupid. So stupid.
I mean, there's not even students on campus and he's leaving.
I think he took summer classes.
He did. Is the issue. But isn't that insane? That seems insane.
It's insane.
It's pretty dumb.
It's completely insane.
I mean, granted,
the basketball season hasn't even started.
Right. I mean, granted, the entire college basketball structure is set up to be as punitive as possible to like young black teenagers, but this feels especially odd.
So we know he's applying for a waiver. His dad told some member of the Horde that they're definitely applying for a waiver so we can play this year. Want to like set odds on this, on whether or not they're going to grant it?
0% chance.
See, my thing is, if this kid was going to like North Carolina, I'd say of course they're gonna let him play. Fucking of course.
Well, that's because he'd already have a major.
Right. Exactly.
He'd already have a degree from North Carolina.
He'd be a grad
student. It's us, and like, I don't know what happened to Mark Emmert in stores. Like, I don't know, something really terrible has scarred him. He's got like a serious emotional problem in relation to Stores Connecticut. Cause like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but like, they got it out for us, man.
He was only able to grift a couple $100 million from UConn.
Right.
When he was in charge of all that construction. Mm. And he really wanted $400 million.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, I think, there's no way you can read the actual rules of this and find the loophole around it in writing. It's a basic fairness, if not moral
fairness.
Decision.
It's basic fairness.
Which assures you the NCAA will not do what most people would think is reasonable. betting on the NCAA the right thing by most human standards is a losing proposition.
Yeah, it won't happen because they're monsters.
Prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
Don't be horrible tyrants. Just the draconian punishment of literal teenagers.
So the Wilson news is especially nice, though, because then 2 hours later, Cam Reddish said he was going to Duke.
Which we all knew.
Yeah, which was, you could read the writing on the wall of that pretty clearly. Apparently, his parents had a really good relationship with Kevin Ollie, but that's just not going to cut it at the moment.
I thought the Boneyard hysteria today was especially hilarious because they were like trying to deep dive on like, oh, that's our gymnasium.
Yeah, when he tweeted a picture of a gym and they treated it like the Zapruder film.
And it was clearly not our gym. Like, it was cool. There were windows where there are no windows in our gym.
It's like the lunatics that see the Virgin Mary in a potato chip, you know? It's like, you see what you want to see if you're on the Boneyard.
And we had it on good authority that he's literally never even been to campus. So, the whole thing was hilarious. We're like, no, guys, he's going to Duke. It's happening. It's fine. Jalen Carey, though, he's supposedly on campus now. I think he came up on 30th.
Yeah, I think today, Friday night is the end of his visit. And he's the guy. He's the one remaining that would be really, really good if they got him in the boat fast.
So this is what I wish Perv was still on the team, because you know Perv would be showing him a good time tonight. Perv would be like locking this deal down.
I mean, it did sort of feel like they needed a momentum shift. You know, they needed to get, I keep using the metaphor, but they needed to get one in the boat. And I gotta feel like getting Wilson to commit while Carey is still on campus, I mean, it can't be a bad thing.
No, it's a great thing.
I might be putting too much stock in it, but
it's a great thing. Though apologies to Christian Foxen, who would
sorry, bud.
Undoubtedly be playing for his tuition this semester.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry, man. If you see Foxen at Huskies, get him a beverage.
Buy him like several drinks, actually. Like at least three.
And then report it to the NCAA because that's a violation. So, yeah, I think Carey's probably, I don't know when he's supposed to, you know, make an announcement, but that'll be the next big shoe to drop. And then my guess is they sort of fill out from there.
It'd be good to see all that stuff.
You know what's weird in the, I apologize because I don't remember who actually wrote it, but I want to say Corey Evans at Rivals. But in his piece, and then it's come up a few times in other pieces, everyone who's talking about Sid Wilson, who's talking about Reddish, they're all mentioning that Terry Larrier is presumably gone at the end of the year to go to the NBA. And I don't understand why that's such a baked in assumption.
I think he's said it on Twitter, basically. Yeah,
I think it was a Snapchat. It was like last year.
He did say like something like that. Yeah, last go round or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, but here's the thing. I'm sure everyone on that roster thinks this is their last year in college. That doesn't mean at the end of the year they're all going to go pro.
Well, it is his fourth, so he's presumably going to get his degree or could get his degree this year. Mm-hmm. And if he thinks he can make some money in Europe, I mean, if he turns into a draft pick, then we had a pretty good season, I'm guessing.
That's true. I mean, if he can leave and go in the first round, like,
I would love it. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, yes, be a first round draft pick, Terry Larrier. Be that awesome this year that's what's happening. Because then we'll just win a national championship, basically.
I just find it interesting. I mean, I get wanting to go get that paycheck, and we've seen some guys do it successfully and some not. But the guy hasn't played a competitive basketball game in 2 full years. I find it hard to believe he's going to play himself into the first round.
Wagner was pretty competitive.
No, that game never happened, actually, so I'm not sure what you're referring to. But basically, the guy has had 2 years away from the court. I don't know. I find it interesting, at least.
We all want that to be the case. We want him to be great, but who knows?
I guess my thing is I'm not really expecting this to be, you know, the big time nationally relevant UConn season that we all have grown accustomed to, but it's not out of the question that next season could be.
Depending on who they bring in.
Yeah. And who stays. I mean, if you have, it's not, you could have Gilbert Adams and Larrier on next year's team too. So
it's true.
I mean, we've sort of seen in this new era of UConn basketball, being good is I think, worth more to you than a year early entrance in the pros. I mean, where does Shabazz end up if he leaves after 2013? Playing his senior year on a really good team earned him millions of dollars. And I think the same, I maintain the same would have been true of Daniel Hamilton had he stayed and made, you know, last year's team into a tournament team. He would have been an all-conference player, I believe, and probably could have earned himself a first-round pick, which would have meant hundreds of thousands of dollars at least. And I'm not sure the same isn't true of a guy like Terry Lehrer, who's already essentially a senior. I don't see how, you know, if he can come back and be a star player on a tournament team, I don't think the extra 12 months is going to harm him. But we'll see.
For a guy going into the pros, though, he's got to be what? Now he's 21, something like that. Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but when these kids are going at 19 and now you're like 23, it's a little, I can see that being a thing you want to avoid.
I just don't think, I mean, if there's a 19-year-old athletic bouncy wing in the draft, I don't think people are going to take, you know, a 10-point-a-game Terry Lehrer over that kid anyways. I'm saying he might as well come back and score 19 a game as 23. I think you go higher. I'm also extraordinarily biased because I would really like UConn to be good. So grain of salt with all this.
We'll have to see how it plays out. I'd love to see a gangbuster season from Terry.
I mean, if everyone can play themselves, everyone on the entire roster can play themselves into a first-round draft pick this year. Like the 14 scholarships are the entire lottery.
When LeBron takes Cobb first with that number one pick that they just got, it is going to be lit. I would like all of them to be the best possible players, help old ladies across the street, NBA draft picks, Nobel Prize winners.
Is Ray Allen going to win a Nobel Peace Prize? Because I feel like that's just coming.
He's trending in the right direction.
That's next for him.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening to the Dime Bat Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you later.